burning platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.
Welcome back. It is Thursday, which means that one of our most esteemed guests and friends, of course, hey Mubs, we've got to refer to our people as friends.
Absolutely.
We're such a family here.
We're basically a family at this point.
It is none other than Justice Malala.
Yeah, who is a very busy man and has got things to do and places to get to. So we're going to get straight into it, Justice. Now, yesterday I came across a headline about how Joyce Mujuru has launched the first Zimbabwe People First Party. Not too long ago, Robert Mugabe celebrated his 92nd birthday. The man is going strong.
He's going very strong.
So what does this mean for Zim politics? Are we going to have another David versus Goliath situation where Robert Mugabe...
David versus Robert. That's all that happens in Zim.
Where President Mugabe just wins yet again. How is this landscape looking?
There's no way this David's gonna lose against... gonna win against this guy. It's just... we know the story. We know how it ends. It's bad. I just love the fact that he's 92. He's 92. Think about it. I mean... guys,
hey, I mean, look, let's be honest, the rich live long, and we've known this for long time.
It's quite a thing. He's 92. He's been in power for 36 years.
Sure.
And
longer than I've been alive, but carry on.
I really want you to think about that, because if you were born in Zimbabwe, you'd have come out of, you know, you'd have gone to primary school, you'd have gone to university.
I would have gotten a job. And all under one president.
All under one president. So next time you start complaining about, oh, you know, think politics in South Africa, think about that. 36 years, one guy in charge, cleverest guy in Zimbabwe.
So at 92, Justice, could he maintain his presidency in the next election?
Well, it's now becoming clear. So remember, Joyce Mujuru had been, it was happy with Robert Mugabe. For the past 12 years, she'd been deputy president to Robert, and they loved each other. It was all good. She's a war veteran. She, everything that he did, there she was behind him saying, go, man, go, my brother. You're in charge. You're the man. And so, when she launches a movement like her Zimbabwe First, People First, and so forth, let's take it with a pinch of salt, because this is not someone who, you know, for 36 years has been thinking, we have a problem here. It's only when Grace Mugabe started saying, there are some among us who are not so nice to my husband, and started spreading all these stories about Joyce Mujuru, that suddenly she saw the light after 36 years that maybe we need a bit of democracy here. Maybe we need an opposition party. But when the MDC was being beaten up, thrown in jail, all sorts of things, Joyce Mujuru was very much in there. The one thing about her is that she's getting support from the war veterans. Now in Zimbabwe, you know, it's been 36 years after liberation, but you know, the war veterans just keep on getting increasing. I don't know how they do it, you know. So there was a war, and there was very brave fighting in Zimbabwe in the 60s and 70s. So they win the war, and there are 40,000, 50,000 war veterans.
So if a 60 or 70, we can put an age on these people. They shouldn't be younger than 50?
Let's just say that.
So, I mean, if we're looking for criteria,
but the problem
here
is that you keep on getting 30-year-olds who are war veterans. 2 weeks ago, there was a bit of a kerfuffle with Robert Mugabe, and the war veterans looked incredibly young to me. So she's getting support from those war veterans. It's a bit like Kebi Mapato's MK Veterans League, but anyway, we won't talk about that now. But they keep on increasing, so that's an interesting dynamic that she's got support from that constituency. So it will be interesting to see how she does. I'm just interested in the fact that Robert Mugabe is 92 years old this year, and ZANU-PF is now saying it's him for 2018. So
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
What?
How do you make sense of this? We were going on about Bernie Sanders not being able to make a second term because of life. Life will stop for him. It'll actually stop.
So are they not even prepared to look at other candidates, ZANU-PF? It's Robert Mugabe for 2018.
There's a big fight going on inside ZANU-PF, and Emmerson Mnangagwa, who sort of the coming man, is under pressure. People saying, "Oh, you're not so nice to the president. Why you look like you're plotting? You're plotting against this 92-year-old. What's wrong with you?" And largely that's Grace Mugabe. So I think what's going to happen in Zimbabwe, sad to say, is that actually there is a succession plan. It's very good, and it means that Grace Mugabe is the most likely person, in my view, to become the next president of Zimbabwe.
But then what happens with Joyce then? Because Grace doesn't sound like she likes her very much.
No. They're not. Joyce is going to be an opposition candidate. Because of her history with Mugabe, I don't think she's going to win it. Because of the history of ZANU-PF rigging those elections, as they did in 2008 and 2002, and we know this because two of our judges went and observed those elections and gave Thabo Mbeki, way back in 2003-2004, a report that said these elections were a total sham, and those elections were a total sham. We know that the opposition was arrested, beaten up, and so forth in 2008. Those elections were a sham. So, quite frankly, I think we're done here. Grace Mugabe is going to be the next president of Zimbabwe.
From the predictability of Zimbabwe politics, what's the latest on this Pravin Gordhan versus Zuma, which apparently the press is blowing way out of proportion?
And why is he being questioned by the Hawks? Is he being questioned by the Hawks? I've struggled to follow this story because, you know, a lot has been happening over the last few days, but every day they've been in the papers.
You people in the media, you're so terrible. It's your fault.
All right, help me understand what is going on here. So, Zuma versus Gordhan.
So, according to what we are told from the union buildings, there's no problem here. There is absolutely no problem here. There's no problem, and that's why two ministers yesterday, there's no problem, okay?
Okay.
But two ministers held a press conference in which they said, oh, you know, it's just, there's no investigation. They're just asking him nicely to answer a few questions nicely, okay? So you have two ministers. I'm going to come back to these two ministers because I enjoy them very much, these two. So you have those two ministers. You have Minister Gordhan issuing his response saying, oh, by the way, are you investigating a crime? What is the crime you're investigating? What are the powers that you're using? This is his letter to Benning Ntlameza, Lieutenant General, head of the Hawks. What exactly are you, under what law are you investigating me exactly? And, oh, by the way, did you know there was something called a budget? I was busy with that. That's why I can't answer your 27 questions.
Nice questions.
So the 27 questions haven't been answered, and you have three ministers yesterday. So two hold a press conference, one issues a statement. And what do you have? Late at night, we have a statement from the former acting head of SARS, Ivan Pillay, and one of his deputies at SARS during Pravin Gordhan's time. So you have five people issuing statements. The day before, you had the SA Revenue Services, Tom Moyane, issuing a statement. On Monday and Tuesday, you had the presidency issuing statements saying, it's okay, there's no problems. You had the Hawks issuing statements. So already you have eight different players in this. Oh, it's okay, there's no problem. When you see so many people telling you there's no problem, you must know one thing. There is a big problem here, a massive problem. And really, that problem is that Pravin Gordhan, if you want to understand this story, look at it this way. Pravin Gordhan is asked to come back to the finance ministry on December 13 last year. He comes back. He looks at his empty desk and says, what can I do? The next day he goes to SARS and says, you guys are firing people, you're restructuring, you're closing down the big business center, so now I can't run after big businesses and get money for the tax money for the fiscus. Stop it now. The gentleman at South says, I'll think about it, and then...
Is this Mr. Moyani?
This is Mr. Moyani. So he arms and oars and arms and oars, and then Pavin leaves, and he says, what am I going to do? He says, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to defy him. He says to him, Nhlanhla Nene approved this thing. Now Nhlanhla Nene is gone. So there's a new boss in town. Does it mean that just because the old boss did it, then I can defy you? Well, anyway, he defies the finance minister. But also, Pravin Gordhan doesn't sit there and say, I'm going to fix SARS. He says, I'm going to fix SAA too. So he stops that deal. And a few people who are close to the president are very unhappy. You saw what he did last week. He didn't go to the New Age breakfast run by the Guptas. He said, no, I'm going to do my own thing. So he's doing all these things that are putting a lot of people, making a lot of people unhappy. And really, so what you have is not a battle between Pravin Gordhan and Tom Moyani. You have a battle between President Zuma and Pravin Gordhan. And it's because they represent two different things. President Zuma wants SAA to buy those six jets. He wants nuclear power to go ahead in South Africa. He wants his friends, the Guptas, to continue to get the deals that they get. Pravin Gordhan doesn't want that. So this battle is at that very, very top. And all the stuff that's happening, the investigations and so forth, reflect what's happening inside the ANC. And it's that the ANC is two animals at the moment. One that says, it's my turn to eat. Another that says, no way are you going to eat.
But what is the end goal here for President Jacob Zuma? Is the end goal to push the finance minister out? Because wouldn't that be the absolute last thing that we could suffer as a country, is losing another finance minister?
If Pravin Gordhan resigns, walks away, is fired, think about when the rumors sprang up on Thursday and the report started that he'd allegedly threatened to resign and so forth. The rent started going wobbly. All the gains that had been made since he came into the office suddenly were reversed. If he goes, people are going to look around this country and say, you know what, it's time to think of that fruit. It's yellow and it's sort of, you can peel it, because that's where we'd be going. It's all banana.
And so
I think that's the key thing that to with this whole thing, that Pravin Gordhan is powerful. President Zuma is unhappy about the power that he believes now Pravin Gordhan holds. And I think what's happening with all these charges, these questions, are attempts to rattle him, to make him scared, to say to him, remember, we've got something on you. Will it work? I've been interested in the support that Pravin Gordhan has received from the South African Communist Party. He's received from Gwede Mantashe. And I think there is deep division about this issue in the ANC, and that those deep divisions mean that he's got support, and that support keeps on increasing, and he will find himself a bit like Thuli Madonsela, who's been called all sorts of names, but today she's a hero in South Africa.
But how deep are the divisions within the ANC really, though, Justice? Because when the DA tries to pass another motion of no confidence and then the ANC backs their leader, what divisions are you talking about here? Everything is fine. Everything is rosy.
Yes. you know, one of the things, and we've spoken about it on the show before, it's people saying Jacob Zuma is going to go. And you know, this has been going on for the past 4 or 5 years. People say, oh, Jacob Zuma is going to go, the ANC. But the ANC, if Jacob Zuma goes, it will be because the ANC makes him go. Don't be because the DA has put a motion of no confidence on the table. So, in my view, it's not that the ANC is backing him. The ANC cannot allow an opposition party to go to parliament, run a motion, and get the support of its members. So all those ANC members went in there saying, these guys, remember what the DA had allegedly done. It had publicly said to ANC MPs, vote with your conscience, do something for South Africa, as Musi Mamane said, don't do it for the party, vote with us and vote with us to get rid of President Zuma. Among the other things, apparently, every MP received an email from the DA saying, Baba, don't forget, you know, we're going to have a little vote tonight today. Will you do the right thing? And, you know, all these things to get the ANC members of parliament to vote with the DA, but it wasn't going to happen. The ANC told its people, if we're going to do anything, it will be us saying to our president, now we've had enough of you. So I don't think the ANC is going to allow that. But, you know, there are storm clouds looming for President Zuma on this thing. The EFF, although a lot of people say, oh, you know, another useless motion of no confidence, the truth of the matter is that the EFF will be putting another motion of no confidence on the floor as soon as the Constitutional Court comes back and declares whether President Zuma, how shall I put it, broke his oath when he failed to comply with the directive from the public protector to pay for what are undue benefits from the Nkandla House. So if that happens, the EFF is going to have a stick to beat President Zuma with, and it will be that the Constitutional Court says you did not protect, you did not uphold your oath of office that says that you will uphold the Constitution. So I think that that's going to be a big, big issue for President Zuma. So we'll see another motion of no confidence. Remember as well that this week President Zuma has a bit of an issue. He's in court again. Can I just ask, does anyone know how many lawyers does President Zuma keep in? Because he's
if you look at the lawyer bill, I reckon it's up there with Nkandla itself.
Seriously. Yeah. I mean, you think about it. This week, you have legal counsel arguing these points in the High Court. 2 weeks ago, you had the Constitutional Court. Virtually every day, President Zuma has a court case going. Not every day, but every week, every second week. I mean, there must be lawyers out there just laughing all the way to the bank, from his personal lawyer Michael Harley to, I saw, Kemp J. Kemp is back, Jeremy Gauntlet, and then there are all the other people who are being used by the DA, by the EFF, all the other parties to essentially keep President Zuma out of jail. It's amazing. It's amazing.
I think Roman, one of our regulars who messages us daily on WeChat, didn't you do an hourly rate breakdown for us for Gauntlet in terms of how much he charges per hour? And it's tens of thousands, apparently.
It's ridiculous.
These are very pricey lawyers.
On average, it's 50,000 a day.
Sorry. If you don't laugh, you will cry.
I thought you were laughing because you're thinking about your salary at Cliff Central. But anyway.
Now,
50,000 a day. So think about it. There are three. Generally, there'll be three. So there'll be the senior counsel, his sidekick. There'll be the attorneys. So there must be about four or five lawyers in there. So attorneys and advocates. I mean, if the state is picking up this bill, we're paying through the nose these things.
It will be interesting to see what the Concord, what decision they come back with. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, Police Minister Nathin Hloko has reiterated that he stands by his original Nkandla report.
Yes.
Just remind us again what that report contained. And now he's saying, and I stand by that decision.
Was that the one where he was sweating profusely while reading a script of some sort?
Thank you, Ben. That image is stuck in my head. It's one of those, you know, they say if you've got a song stuck in your head, chew some gum or something. Mm. I don't know what to do about an image stuck in your head. What do you do for that? Because, you know, someone has, what are these things on Twitter? Meme.
Yes, yeah. Memes.
Yeah. So someone's done these memes of him in various positions of sweat.
Distress.
So it's that those moments of him, you know, it's the left side, the right side, he's just doing this thing, man. I mean, he was sweating buckets.
And the air conditioning was just fine that day.
So people were saying at yesterday's press conference that, oh, fantastic, you know, he's not sweating at all. That's really good. This is a good day. So so a very fine journalist based in Cape Town, Gay Davies, stood up and said, Minister Nhleko, why should we believe you when, you know, you're the guy who came up with that fantastic, amazing, PowerPoint-driven Nkandla report? You'll remember that the Nkandla report, basically what happens is that an independent institution, the public protector, goes and investigates over months, puts together a report, it goes and you're supposed as the president of the country to comply. Instead of complying with that report, President Zuma said, you know what, I'm going to get one of the people who work for me, to now investigate me. Mm. And, you know, so no independence, no institution, me. So what happens then? Minister Nhleko goes out there, very energetic, da-da-da-da-da-da, with music and all that, and compiles his report. And can you guess what it said? There is no need to pay. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So he has that famous press conference where, you know, he is slightly inconvenienced by his sweat glands. And there's music. What was the song? Oh, Sole Mio, all that stuff. And we are told that it's all fine because, you know, President Zuma's underling has cleared him. So it must be true. It's his underling who cleared him. And then we wait and see, and there's and the EFF and the DA and the Corruption Watch take this matter to the Constitutional Court, saying, you guys you can't have parallel investigations. The public protector's report must be complied with. A few days before, Jeremy Gauntlet, President Zuma's senior counsel on this, comes out and says, no, the president wants to pay. So imagine you're sitting there, you're not in circle, and you've done your best to protect your man. And he turns around and says, no, you were wrong. Mm. And you were wrong. And all those MPs, Matola Matsekga, all those MPs who just fell over themselves to protect the president and say he doesn't have to pay. President Zuma does a U-turn and says, nah, I want to pay. I'm good. Thanks so much for everything. And so you're embarrassed. So this guy yesterday turns around and says, no. There was an investigation done by me and I haven't seen anything that proves it wrong. So I was right on Nkandla. When your own, the person you've been protecting, has thrown you under the bus and said, this guy, no, he's wrong. I want to pay. You're still saying, no, don't pay. I mean,
Stockholm Syndrome, right there.
What kind of Stockholm Syndrome? It's terrible.
Now, just before we let you go, we've got a question here from Dre. It's something that Gareth actually brought up earlier in the week. It said, Is it not in the ANC's best interest just to get rid of Zuma now because they can't buy another 10 years of time, i.e. two terms for the new president, rather than losing more votes over the next 3 years? Because if the new ANC president comes in, the first term will be seen as a trial period and the second term will be seen as a real delivery period.
It's a good question. It's a very good question.
It's a fair point because, as you were saying, they're not going to let opposition say, okay, no confidence. You know what, guys are right. They're just going to blank that. But at the same time, having him in could be a hindrance. And it could lose key votes.
I think it's a great question. It's absolutely key to remember that the ANC is really not one thing. You'll remember in the run-up to the 2014 election, there was a big fight in Gauteng where Paul Mashatile and the ANC in Gauteng basically said, "We love you, President Zuma, but can we run our campaign in Gauteng without your face as the face of the campaign?" And they were told to go sit in the corner and stop doing that. But that is the debate in the ANC that's been raging for quite a while. That if you think about the ANC in the city of Johannesburg, in 2011, the ANC got 62% of the vote in the city of Joburg. In 2014, if those were municipal elections, the ANC would have got 52%. So from 62% to 52%, that is essentially the people of Joburg saying, we still love the ANC, but people walking away here. So that drop says to people like the ANC in Gauteng that we don't want to be associated with someone who's in court every second week.
Yep.
We don't want to be associated and so forth and so forth. So that message, that train of thought is definitely there inside the ANC. But there's another train of thought. And when we spoke about these two forces inside the ANC that are battling, it's between people who are saying, we are on a hiding to nothing here. It's time to jettison President Zuma, and there are people who say, no, he's very popular, let's keep him on, and so forth and so forth. And so it would make sense if the ANC was one thing, was a united animal, to say, let's get rid of President Zuma, and people agreed, and they would, because that would begin to turn the ship around for the ANC. And this has happened before. In PE, the ANC got rid of the mayor, Ben Fischer. And 3 weeks ago, there was a poll done by Ipsos Machino, I think, that said that because Denis Jordan is doing such a good job in PE, people are saying, if he's the ANC candidate, I'm going to vote for the ANC. So the ANC is being saved, whereas it was basically going to lose that metro. But because they saved the situation, as it were, there's a turnaround. So can they do it with at national level as they did at city level in Nelson Mandela Bay? Well, we'll see. But okay, that debate is there.
Well, Justice, we do have to move on because I know you've got a busy day. But finally, the IEC elections. Yeah, have you got a shortish answer if we get when these things
are going
to happen?
I've got a very shortish answer. And the shortish answer is that I think it's something that we need to look at. You know that first the courts ruled that in Tlokwe and other by-elections, they were made null and void because the IEC had allowed people who are not registered to vote in those by-elections, and they were very controversial and so forth. And now we have a situation where the IEC is saying, we want clarification from the courts about what exactly this means, and that means that we could have, everyone is saying, no, we can't have, but we could have a situation where local government elections, which are supposed to take place within 3 months of May this year, in that period, 90-day period after May, I think May 27, being pushed out. And if that happens, that has lots and lots of consequences. So I think this is something that needs to be watched very closely. We can't afford to be postponing elections over an issue like this one. So we need to do something very decisive about it, and it needs to be resolved very quickly. So the IEC is yet another institution that needs to be watched, that we don't have problems with elections. We haven't had in 26 years, and so we need to make sure. So in 22 years of democracy, and so we need to make sure that that institution stays independent and trusted.
Nice, Justice. Well, thanks so much. We've run out of time. There's so many problems, so little time. I think as a bumper sticker for the South African flag next to it. Right, you can catch Justice. If you didn't get all of that, the podcast, of course, will be up, and then you'll be back next week, Thursday. We'll see you then.
Super. Thanks so much, guys.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.